Nick, 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 Nick,
Nickelodeon!
From Nickelodeon Studios in Burbank, California, this is the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. Hi guys, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Hector Navarro. My guest is an actor, writer, producer who's appeared in TV and movies for over 20 years and is perhaps best known as Conan O'Brien's comedy partner starting in 1993 with Late Night with Conan O'Brien. He's also no stranger to animation, voicing the character of Mort in the Madagascar film series and subsequent TV shows, appearing on shows like Robot Chicken and Bob's Burgers, and voicing Ben on Nickelodeon's The Mighty Bee. Cannot wait to talk to the insanely funny Andy Richter. This is going to be great. I'm talking with Andy Richter. This is so cool. This is so cool. I've been doing comedy since I can remember. I'm a huge, huge fan. And I love talking to comedians about their work. Where does the beginning of that relationship with you and the world of animation begin? What kind of stuff did you watch as a kid? Were you a cartoons kid? Did you like animated movies? Like, did that start?
Yeah, I mean, not in an obsessive way, in a very normal kid way.
Got it.
In the way that animation or cartoons. And I still call them cartoons.
Me too.
Yeah, I don't. When I say I don't say I have a VO for an animated show. Yeah. I say I'm working on a cartoon because I don't find that in any way.
No, it's
to
not
be
a derogatory
dismissive or derogatory
dismissive.
At all. No.
I read comic books. I love graphic novels. I call them comic books because I'm not offended by that.
No,
like, I
no,
love that.
No.
And cartoons, same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. As a kid, it was Saturday mornings. I sort of grew up in probably the heyday of Saturday morning, and. Before I even kind of realized, and I won't remember which network was which, but yeah. I even before I even could sort of brand identify, I would realize there were some of the channels, like I like, you know, like a lot of the Hanna-Barbera sort of the Great Race, those ones, you
wacky
know,
races,
wacky races. Like I knew, like this is lazy, and
well, yeah. When you stack that up to the stuff that was like, I
Bugs
didn't realize
Bunny?
At the time,
yeah.
The stuff
or
that,
real Tom and Jerry,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Like you know, that stuff back then was theatrical shorts that were just porting to television, and I didn't realize, but I was like, but this is so the animation is gorgeous.
Oh,
this.
Absolutely.
And,
and I still am a fan of Scooby Doo. I still Scooby Doo is huge for me as
me
a kid.
Too.
I watched every Scooby Doo, and it's interesting to me now looking back on it, and I don't know what it is about Scooby-Doo, whether it's those particular characters, whether it's the
scary but not too scary.
Yeah, scary but not too scary, I think, is one of the big keys. But also, where you might look on it and go, oh my God, it's the same crappy pattern. Every single, it's so obvious.
But there's
it's
something
so,
comforting about that.
Absolutely. That's why it works too, is because it's like getting on a thrill ride.
Sure.
It starts here and it ends there, and in the middle I'll go woo, and then but I know where it's going. I don't need to be surprised.
There was never an episode where Shaggy turned to the camera and he's like, I don't think we're gonna solve this one, man.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
People are dying.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh my God, that's a real vampire.
Why do you think that animation and comedy in general just go together so well?
There is the ability to develop and introduce absurdity in a much larger kind of way, in that you can have, you know, the Acme Corporation can exist in a cartoon, you know, that you can actually, you know, buy, you know, whatever, shark repellent, and it actually, you know, it repels a shark, or, you know, bombs that go off that don't really kill anybody, that just leave them covered in soot and their clothes exploded.
Yeah. non-lethal bombs.
I think there's a safety to it. There's a non-lethality to it.
Sure.
But I think that just also, too, when really, truly, literally anything can happen, because you're just drawing it rather than actually making it happen, gives a lot more kind of free rein, which is the beginnings of comedy, is letting the human mind do whatever it wants and be surprising and be fantastic and be absurd. I also think there's a lot of things that a cartoon character can say. There's a lot of jokes that a cartoon character can do that are kind of cruel. in a way that I don't think that if those words were coming out of a human face,
yes,
that you would be able to laugh at it as much.
Yes.
But there, you're removed from the humanity of it. And this is something that's really interesting to me about two shows, The Simpsons and Bob's Burgers.
Yes.
Both family sitcoms.
Yes.
I feel more empathy, sympathy, more attachment, mm-hmm. more concern for the characters in those two shows,
right.
and for the units of those families than I ever have with any live action sitcom.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, The Simpsons has been on forever, and
sure.
And now it's kind of, God bless them, they're still going, and it's
yeah.
still fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's not the same family structure.
Sure.
If Homer Simpson, if that show was live action,
oh, he would be the most hated.
He's such an awful person.
We wouldn't put up with that.
Yeah, you wouldn't put up with it. I was living in L.A. I had left the Conan show.
Yes.
And the head writer that had been at the Conan show when I left, a guy named Jonathan Groff, left shortly after I did. Coincidental? I don't think so. He left shortly after I did. And one of the first jobs that he had is he ran the tragically short-lived Siegfried and Roy animated show. And they have a part for me as like a lovelorn panda, I believe. if memory serves, I went in to record that episode, and after I actually got a phone call on the way to the recording session from my manager saying, there's some people from DreamWorks that are going to come in at the end, and they're working on an animated feature, mm-hmm. and they want you to audition, or they have a part for you in that, and mm-hmm. And so they'll come in at the end, and since you're in the studio anyway, after you finish, you'll audition for this movie.
Yeah.
I finished recording the I can't remember what the name of the Siegfried and Roy show was called, but we recorded that, and then some people came, well, it was Tom McGrath and whoever his partner at the time was, mm-hmm. And the producer of the movie came in, and they said, it's this movie called Madagascar, and they're these zoo animals, and they broke down the story, and they had some artwork, but they said, we want you to try out for this part that's a mouse lemur, which is the tiniest lemur. Here's different ways it might look. And it was, and I think it was, one was little, and then one was where he was really huge, but would have had a tiny voice or something like that.
Sure.
But the artwork wasn't even set, really.
Yeah.
And I kind of, and I tried different voices, and they said, I think that they already had set the King Julian voice.
Okay.
To be that sort of,
yeah,
whatever Indian,
the crazy,
yeah, that
yeah.
kind of Indian Rasta
yeah.
kind of combo thing that Sasha ended up doing. I don't know if Sasha was hired by then or not, but they said, should he have an accent or not an
yeah.
accent? And I don't think that matters. Some of them will have accents, some of them won't. And I basically kind of just used, in a way, I borrowed this accent that Robert Smigel uses. For Robert Smigel, who was a writer on the Conan show and has gone on to do different things, but Robert is the voice of Triumph, the insult comic dog.
Yes.
And the accent that Triumph does is Robert's, when you ask him, what's that accent, he just says, that's the accent that I think all dogs speak in. He thinks that all dogs have an accent, and that... And he, he says it's his grandparents. Like, it's kind of like, it's sort of just a vaguely Eastern European,
yeah.
old Jewish person yeah. accent. And so I kind of borrowed that accent with a little pipsqueak voice like yeah. this. And they said, oh, that's great. Yeah, 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 do that.
You got all these from the gorillas?
Uh-huh. You like?
Yes, what I like very much. How did you do such a thing?
They told me to beat them up, so I did.
Don't be ridiculous, what? You are far too puny to beat up such big gorillas.
I read a few lines
mm-hmm.
and left, and maybe asked, hey, did anything ever happen with that? I don't know what's happened with that. I mean, like 6 months went by.
Yeah.
And I got a call. They want you to come in and record some more for that animated thing. And I was like, what animated thing? that thing you did, the DreamWorks thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, really? Oh, okay. They're going to, am I hired?
Yeah.
Like, am I doing it? And they're like, well, yeah, I guess so, because they're having you read more. And so I went back in and read some more. Of Mort. I'm sure that they probably had to play me a reference to even remember what I had done. And that was the way it went. I think I did maybe two more sessions, but always months in between.
Yeah.
To the point where I'd kind of forgotten that it was even happening. And then it became, you know, and then it became this really big movie. And it was the first time after Madagascar premiered, and I went to the premiere of the movie, which was very fancy, about as fancy as I've ever, like in terms of, I went to do the junket, and I flew up in the DreamWorks private jet to San Francisco.
Wow.
Just me and Ben Stiller in a jet for like 16 people, which I was really like, oh, geez, the waste of fuel this is causing. And did a junket in San Francisco because they were piggybacking the junket onto the back of one of the Star Wars movies. And then when we went to New York for the premiere, I stayed in the largest hotel room I've ever stayed at in my life. And my wife and my son, it felt like, you know, staying in one little tiny corner of a warehouse.
Yeah.
If you have a chance to work for Jeffrey Katzenberg, I recommend it. He's very generous with the Ralph Lauren gift cards and gift baskets and things, which he is. He's a really – he's as big moguls go, he's about as nice as they come.
It's awesome.
And had this big splashy premiere.
Yeah.
And then after the first or second week, I got a call from my manager saying, you made your bonus. And I was like, bonus? What bonus? And they're like, oh, the box office bonus, because it broke 100 million. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I had one on that? And they're like, you've had one on everything. You've never been in anything that made that much money. So I'm like, oh, my God, this is what it's like to be in things that make money. This is incredible.
Yeah.
And I was not paid a lot of money in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And very shortly after it aired, of course, they said they were going to do another one.
Mm-hmm.
And the negotiations were always, they were phrased in a very kind of almost like regal kind of way. Like when it came, like, there's going to be a second one, we're going to start negotiations. And I get the phone call and it was, Jeffrey would love you to do the movie. And he's just, what they're going to do is they're just going to put a zero on the end of the number that you made on the other movie. It's like, oh, make 10 times what I made on the first. Okay, yeah. I don't think we really need to go back. That sounds good. Yeah.
That's awesome. Great.
It's ludicrous. It was the second one especially. They sort of changed the math because DVD sales and with rentals they changed the math.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't as advantageous to us. Like, it wasn't like they added another zero onto the third one.
I don't know if you've encountered a lot of Mort fans,
but yeah, what I there's love about a, the little kids. Little
yes,
kids love Mort.
It's not a lot of screen time for this guy, but he's a little scene stealer.
Yes.
And this isn't a movie with
a punchline.
Absolutely.
He's a punchline.
So
we need
memorable.
An ending for this scene. Bring in the projectile, the cute projectile with the big eyes. Yeah.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
And this is another cool thing that I love about it is I wanted to ask you, Andy, what was the response like when I mean, it might still happen to you, but when people found out that that was you doing the voice of Mort in the first Madagascar and then the subsequent films, what's that response like when people found out?
Many people say to this day, they don't know that. They'll be like, and I mean, little kids, it happens less and less, but, you know, at my kid's school.
Yeah.
Do the Mort voice. Do the Mort voice. As I'm just, you know, walking through with a, you know, whatever, like a tray of baked goods to drop off at the coffee meeting or whatever.
Yeah.
Do the Mort voice. I'm like, hello, everybody. You know, it's not like it's like I feel like I'd be mobbed if it was more identifiably me.
But
it is a fun surprise, and it is kind of neat because I have had people that know me and work with me for a long time.
Yeah.
And it'll come up and they'll be like, What? That's you? My kids watch that movie all the time. I'm so sick of that, and I've been listening to you all the time, and I didn't even know it was you I was getting sick of. Like, yeah, yeah. That's me. So,
does it make the character more likable for them, or are they even? Do they double down on like Mort's even more annoying?
No,
now
I think usually it ends up being a positive
thing. Of course, I hope. Yeah.
I mean, nobody's told me to my face. Yeah. You know. Well, now I hate it. Now that I know it's you. It gets harder. I mean, I don't know how much longer I'll be doing it. It gets harder as I get older to scream at the top of my lungs. And sometimes the recording sessions are an hour of just like, and just recently I had a King Julian, and I don't know, about 3 or 4 months ago, there was some kind of flu-y head cold that was giving, and it was, after I got it, my whole family got it, a bunch of people at work got it, and I was like, yeah, I missed it.
Yeah.
And then I started getting a little bit of a sore throat the day before I went into a recording session. Did 2 episodes that were super Mort heavy.
Yeah.
Shrieking, screaming, yelling, and then my voice was screwed for 2 weeks. I did a week of Conan shows where on the Thursday, we do Monday through Thursday, I actually had to pre-record the top of the show announce because on Wednesday, he couldn't, he usually comes out with Conan O'Brien. That's his cue. That's his cue to step out.
Yeah.
He couldn't even hear me because it was like, Conan O'Brien. You know, I do feel like I'm not blaming anybody, but the timing of like just starting to get sick and then shrieking like Mort for an hour and a half. And I have had recording sessions where I'm just a little bit under the weather and just between every line having to guzzle hot water just to sort of keep the shriek muscles lubricated.
Hello.
Yo, Bing.
Yeah, buddy?
We got us a trespasser.
Oh, we got us a thief. You know what we do with thieves around here.
Kisses and huggies?
Nope, thieves get bounced.
Has there been anything that like that's Mort specific that a kid or a fan has come up and been like, this Mort line, and you're like, I don't even remember?
I certainly have seen more so with the television shows, with the Penguins of Madagascar or with the King Julian show, which I just call King Julian. I forget the all hail part. But there are definitely scenes that I will watch that I have no recollection of recording. I can watch video of myself in drag or in a cowboy outfit and have no recollection of it whatsoever. Because having had the luxury of being on television for 20 years.
Yeah.
And in the daytime, my day is very frequently, get kids off to school, dentist appointment or whatever, go to the gym, go to work. There's some discussion of something, show politics or whatever. And then, oh, they need you downstairs. All right, come downstairs. What is this? Oh, it's a bit about a pest control place. Okay. Put on this jumpsuit and this helmet and then say these lines. Okay. Take it all off, and then it's out of my head. And then I can see that 2 years later and go, when did I put on that jumpsuit? I don't remember that.
You mean you don't remember every single obscure sketch from Late Night with Conan O'Brien from 1993?
I can come home at the end of a day, and my wife will say, who's on the show?
Yeah.
And I mean, it happened less than an hour before, and I'll go, let's see. There was a woman. I remember there was one of them was a woman.
That's great.
It's really. It's being on TV is glamorous.
Yeah.
But if something becomes your life, the glamour does not. It fades. It does not. Or if it doesn't, then you have you should be in therapy or something. You have issues.
Again, you're a writer. You must look at animation in a different way.
Well, there's difference. There's difference between what, animation that's a comedy and animation, like any sort of Studio Ghibli movies.
Exactly.
There's a big difference. And we just watched recently, Kiki's Delivery Service.
Great.
And that movie...
It's delightful.
It's absolutely delightful, and it would have cost so much money to make it, to make it look good.
Right.
It's cheaper to do it as a cartoon.
Sure.
But it's just a ride. I don't look at that and think necessarily about, oh, they really, you know, the third act was a little soft. I don't think about that at all in that way.
Yeah.
Whereas I can watch some of the more mainstream American big studio animated movies, and I can sit and think, oh, this third act is a real snooze. And, you know, I still think... And it's something, it's only adults that make these movies, and you don't get it. You don't get it in the Studio Ghibli movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I can always hear the studio notes. I just hear the people who are, the way too many people who are paid to have notes.
Right.
Having notes about, shouldn't we stop everything and have everyone stop and talk about how much they like each other, or how many feelings they're having?
Yeah.
And it's always, to me, it's just like, it's the assuaging of the guilt of the people who are making product for children.
Ah.
Like they feel like they're like, it's not substantive. And it's like,
yeah,
if the director is doing the job, and if you've created a plot and an atmosphere that is good, and you hire good people to do the voices,
mm-hmm.
all of those connections take care of themselves.
Are you a big fan of sort of Eastern animation? You know, outside?
Somewhat, okay. Somewhat. Some of it's a little too, like there's a lot of Japanese, there's a lot of anime
mm-hmm.
that is just kind of like, it's beyond me. I don't,
sure.
like, I don't, and, but I, you know, I think there's a difference. The Studio Ghibli movies, I love them. But then there's some, like, there's plot points that happen in that are just, I just think, well, I'm not Japanese.
Right.
Like,
there's a cultural,
yeah,
sure,
if
sure,
you
sure.
said to me, what happens next?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a fairly imaginative person. I could maybe come up with 10 things.
Yeah.
And the thing that happens next, I'd be like, I could have come up with 1,000 things, and I wouldn't have said, oh, it'll turn into a dragon or whatever, you know,
yeah.
or a water spirit will come out
yeah.
and, you know, belch garbage on everybody.
Yeah.
Like, there are just so many narrative left turns
yeah.
that a lot of these movies take that I get tired by, because
sure.
it's there's a pattern that I think anime fans that they like to follow, and I just kind of it's not interesting to me. I'm certainly not an expert. There are people, you know, there are people that are much more well versed
mm-hmm.
in sort of world culture
mm-hmm.
and the clash of various world cultures. But from my perspective, I do see a lot of things, like, say, Pacific Rim,
mm-hmm.
which is obviously borrows so much Japanese stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much Japanese stuff, even like the creation of the creatures coming out from the bowels of the earth.
Yeah.
But it ends in a very Western kind of way, which is the conquering of them.
Yeah.
And I don't think that in the Eastern ones, it's never the good guys and the bad creatures. And
yeah.
then, you know, and then it's always kind of a little more sort of like, we're here living this life. And then, oh, here comes another, you know, like if you even think about the monster movies in
yeah.
Japan, you know, Godzilla's not evil.
Yeah.
Godzilla's just Godzilla.
He's trying to live.
Yes.
Trying to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, we conquered the devil. It's sort of like, you know, we saved the city, but there's not a lot of judgment.
yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of inherent judgment. I mean, I think that as it went on, they're sort of out of just kind of narrative expedience, there had to be like monsters that were on the human side
right.
versus ones that were sort of more anti-human.
Yes.
But that's because there has to be some kind of conflict. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
But they, you know, but they don't get to, it's not like they get, conquered. They get sent off to an island to be used again, you
yeah,
know, at
exactly.
some point.
It's nature. It's the balance
yes,
of nature.
Yes.
You know?
But there's, but yeah, but I mean, Western movies still are Westerns.
Yes.
you
yeah.
know, to use Western two different ways. There's a guy in a white hat and there's guys in a black hat. And the guy in a white hat deserves to live and a guy in a black hat should be killed.
Wow.
That's it. You know?
That's really sad if
yeah.
you think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. But that's kind of, you know, yeah. We like that.
Yeah.
We must like that.
Like things
we
to
keep
be
doing it over and over.
Wrapped
yeah.
up in a little bow. We like yeah. that, you know, exactly.
Yeah. That's and somebody's either
so
got
to
go to jail or die.
You did a voice in an anime, correct?
Yeah.
The Cat Returns.
I did, but it was like the fourth version of it or something, yeah.
What was that experience like?
It was weird. It was weird because there had been, Well, first of all, I don't think Studio Ghibli had... I think Spirited Away had just gotten a lot of attention.
Right. It's early 2000s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't... I don't think that there were... Because now there's an existing relationship with Disney. Mm-hmm. And I don't... And there had been a previous translation of the movie that was seen as subpar.
Right.
So it came into someone else's hands. And I think... Well, and I think it's one of those things like... Oh, Spirited Away, Oscar winner. What else has that guy done?
Yeah.
This one? How can we buy that? Yeah, we can buy that. You know, and so then they redid it. And it was the first time I'd ever done ADR on a cat mouth.
Yeah.
That was probably just the weirdest thing. And normally you have to do it in animation all the time, but you're doing it to your own voice. You know, it's something where, or there's been a line change, or there's frequently now... I'm doing King Julian now, and there's lots of the character of Mort in the Madagascar things. It's usually screaming, getting kicked, smashing into something, so getting crushed by something. Yeah, so it's sort of like after you hit that tree, after you're, jettisoned from something and hit that tree, your mouth is kind of in an O, so you have to go, oh, like as you slide down the tree. But this was weird because... The picture was already set.
Right.
And it was in Japanese.
You're syncing it up.
Yeah. And so there, and that's where you do get to the sort of the comedy sketch of dubbing Asian movies where you have to, it has to become things like, well, we are ready for you to enter the kingdom.
Yeah.
Like just weird sort of lilts and rhythms and hanging words.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't normally say in that pacing.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
You have that same thing with the characters in the Madagascar project,
mm-hmm.
and you've had the same thing with your partner, Conan O'Brien, mm-hmm. for 20 years. Why do you think you are so good at doing that, Andy?
Oh, being like the number two?
Sure, yeah.
Because it's who I am. And honestly, it's who I am. I once heard is Steve Van Zandt, Miami, little Steven, Miami Steve Van Zandt, mm-hmm. Bruce Springsteen's guitarist. He answered that same question. He said, I'm good at it. He said, I've been number one. I've had my own band. He said, I didn't like it as much. I kind of have the same feeling. And I've been number one on the call sheet a few times.
Yeah.
And I would have, I certainly would have loved for one of those to become a big roaring hit. It just didn't happen. A lot of it is... It suits my I can say it suits my personality. I grew up in a very tempestuous household, mm-hmm. and I kind of am very much a middle child, not in the sense that I was desperate for attention, but in the fact that I was the morale keeper, that I was the one that when everything seemed to be falling apart, I was holding it together, and I was trying to make everybody laugh, and I was trying to lighten the mood, because I think there was always this kind of feeling of, if we all just decide to kind of brighten up and cheer up about stuff, then we can just move past it, and which is a very childlike, a lot of kind of responsibility was, it landed in my lap at a very early age.
Yeah.
And that, I've been in therapy for a million years to sort of deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it has made it so that it's very easy for me to be, in describing my relationship with Conan, mm-hmm. years ago, I heard once that show horses are notoriously high strung, and that they, when they are transferred, they frequently put in another horse, or frequently they'll put in a dog or a goat.
Mm-hmm.
That these are the actual they put in with the just to keep them company, keep them calm. I can do that.
Yeah.
I can do that. And and I'm not just there to keep the show horse calm.
Yeah.
I mean, I also.
You're also very funny.
Yeah. I also can contribute too. I'm certainly in possession of an ego, but in sort of relative terms, and I don't mean to anybody specifically, I mean industry relative terms, it's a fairly manageable ego that I'm in control of. So I don't mind. I've never, from the first time I stepped on an improv stage, I never needed it.
Yeah.
I like it. I like being there. I like the attention. But when, from a very, being on an improv stage, when you step on it, you see the people that need it. They're begging for it. And they're going to, and it's like, okay, if you need the focus and if you're going to need to, if you have to say every other line in this scene, you go ahead. I mean, I'll be here. I'll be here, and I'll wait my turn, and I'll,
Yeah.
You know, and a part of my ego is to say, you go ahead, you go ahead, you go ahead. Oh, and by the way, I'll still be funnier.
Yeah.
I could do it all day. I love doing cartoon voices, and it's something I wish, cartoon voice world's a very closed world. I mean, the engineer that's recording, Justin, can tell you that he sees the same people all the time because there's like 10 people that do everything.
Absolutely,
yeah. And the reason that there's 10 people that do everything is because they're freaking amazing at it. And I know them all now.
Yeah.
And I'll record with different ones of them, and they'll say, we need this voice, I have some voices in me. I can do cartoon voices.
Sure.
But, I mean, these people, they have...
They can do all the voices.
Yeah, whereas I, like, have maybe 6 or 7 voices.
Yeah.
They have 40.
Yeah.
I just...
Distinct.
Various different people that they can just drop into.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That was a blast, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Good to meet you.
Man, I hope that you guys enjoyed that talk with Andy Richter as much as I did. He is so funny and nice and insightful, and that was so cool to be able to talk to him about his perspective on comedy, as well as he calls them, cartoons, because why wouldn't you call them that? You're not going to want to miss an episode of the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, so please come back, visit us next week on nickanimationpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to the awesome crew who puts this podcast together. This podcast is produced by
Jonathan Highlander,
Dana Vasquez-Eberhard, Kelly Smith,
Andrew Huebner.
Original music by Useful Creatures. All of the incredible social media for our podcast is made by
Narbe Manassians,
Greg Nix.
And thanks to the man who works at controls and makes me sound better than I have a right to,
Justin Brinsfield.
Until next time, thanks for listening to the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, and keep watching cartoons.